Okay, good afternoon, everybody. I'm very conscious we are between you and the train, plane, bus, car, gin and tonic, whatever it is, coffee, tea. So we are now into our final panel, which seems crazy that we're here so quickly, but we've got a great panel to end on. So I'd like, first of all, to welcome and introduce the three panelists that we have with us. So first of all, we've got Andrew. So Andrew Lansley is, amongst many things, as I've been speaking to him, the innovation manager at Cheltenham Festivals, but I've also learned he's also an academic. He does some teaching at the University of Gloucestershire, and he also sits on many, many boards and panels and committees. Next to Andrew, we've got Tamar, who you may have met earlier today when she did an excellent provocation, who is the artistic director from Wonderfeel. And then finally, we've got Fermata Conte, who's the environmental sustainability manager for Manchester International Festival, who obviously live in this amazing building we are in. So, what we intend to do is sort of 10 to 15 minutes maximum per speaker. So the title is Shaping the Future Together, and I think we're thinking of that in terms of sustainability in its widest context, but also, I suppose, any challenges facing the sector going forward. And then after each panelist has spoken, at the very end, we will have some time for some questions, and then we're going to be finished bang on 4:45, otherwise I miss my train to London. So that's the incentive. It'll probably be half an hour late anyway, but never mind. So, yes, I know, exactly. So we'll start off then with. Fantastic.
Hello, check, one, two.
Microphone?
Brilliant.
Thank you.
All right, so we'll start off with Andrew. Thank you.
Lovely job. Thank you so much, Jane. Very excited to be here today. Ah, wonderful. I've taught undergraduate for the last 15 years, so I'm going to need to stand up in front of a PowerPoint slide. I don't know any other way. I'd also like to start, before I get going, by saying thank you. Because if you've worked on an event, if you've filled out a report, if you've done NPO reporting, if you've done anything which has provided data, information, qualitative or otherwise, back to any of the kind of sustainable frameworks and organizations within the UK, I've been keeping an eye on you for the past few years. And this is a bit of a result of that work. So I'm going to do two things today. I'm going to say something positive about sustainability and where we're going. I might even say something slightly positive about the government. Don't throw rocks. I know, you're right to laugh. So there we are. I've painted out my stall. So I've got about 9 minutes to tell you about a project that I'm involved with. I'm very lucky to know quite a few people in this room already. It's due to this chap here, the Donut Advisory Toolkit for events. It's a little bit of technology that, if I'm completely honest, and I always will be, was invented by my wife. She's amazing at PowerPoint, not PowerPoint. I'm good at PowerPoint. I did this. She's amazing at Excel, which is far more difficult to use. But what we did is we took the terms that the sector really likes, we really like disruptive. We really like radical. Local authorities do not like those words. So we got those words and we threw them away. And we thought, how can we find a way to stick together this incredible knowledge that has been built up within the festivals and events sector around sustainability, around accessibility? How can we translate that? How can we transmit it to local authorities to make it into something effective that takes the knowledge from this room? And we're all fairly cognizant, I think, in things like accessibility and sustainability when it comes to events. The 90% aren't. The people that run the large swath of community and smaller festivals and events around the UK don't. So this is a bit of glue that you can see on this screen, okay? The Donut Toolkit Advisory for Events. So if we could get a slide switch, would that be okay? Oh, I've got the clicker. Ah, dangerous to give me this power. Look at that. All right, yeah, it deserves a wee Fermata. Thank you very much. Right, so all these people you can see on the screen, I'm currently employed by. This forms half half of the people that I work for, but that should give you an idea of the kind of snowball that's growing behind this. And again, hopefully you'll see yourself, your event, wherever it is you live, work, hopefully you'll see yourself in this pilot that's coming up. So the Date Toolkit, this thing that I'm here to talk about today, it's not mine. I've already given my wife some credit. I'm going to give some other people too. There is a wonderful bit of work called the Green Events Code of Practice, which has been developed by the sector, that shows what good looks like in terms of sustainable events practice. If we've seen, I hope we have as well, we're all aware of Attitude is Everything. Yeah, absolutely. They're absolute kings. They are the people that run the Charter of Best Practice. So they show you what accessibility or disability provision goodness looks like in events. Well, I've been working on their local authority charter, trying to find a way to embed it into local authority practices when the Green Events Code of Practice was launched at Showman Show 2022, I believe. From that, I spoke to a couple of people in this wonderful network, Mark Denby and Femata Conta within USAM, who introduced me to Chris Johnson from Vision 2025. We stuck these two frameworks together into a toolkit or a spreadsheet. It was a spreadsheet being used by Cheltenham Borough Council, developed with West Oxfordshire Council. It was no good. It was just an indicator thing. We put some maths behind it. And what we did is we created, within this kind of local ecosystem we've got in Gloucestershire, a piece of technology that is centre to this pilot that's starting. What is it? Well, basically, it's three pages. You fill out a three-page questionnaire, and I'll walk over here a bit. I don't want you guys to feel left out. I'm just talking at this screen. I'm going to come up. There we are. Sorry, guys, but, you know, first fair. So what it actually does, it gives you at the point of application. So you're going for your event, and you're filling out your licensing process. You've got a very short questionnaire. Asks you some questions about your events. Asks you some questions about sustainability and accessibility. And then it gives you this wonderful RAG indicator. Okay, it provides quite a few bits. I'll talk about that in a minute because I'm aware I'll run out of time very fast. But it's based on this theory of donut economics. Can I just see a show of hands? Is anyone aware of the donut economic theory? Oh, there are more and more hands every time I go to a conference. This is getting there. So donut economics basically suggests that if something's to be truly sustainable, it needs to exist within two boundaries. The first one is a... Do you play with me, guy? Hey. Keep those hands up. Right. Everything needs to exist within a social foundation, i.e. it does not want to be damaging to human beings. Okay? But the activity of those human beings within that social foundation should not exceed a series of parameters that would exceed or push an ecological ceiling into a damaging area. So it's kind of like you want to make sure you're doing stuff for everyone, but you're not damaging the planet at the same time. With me so far? Fairly common sense? Yeah? Okay. So this toolkit allows you to do that. You fill out this very well-designed, there we are, see that's a spreadsheet there, very well-designed series of questions. And then the Green Events Code there is expressed in the outer ring. And then the Attitude of Everything Charter is expressed there within the inner ring. Okay, and it takes about 10 minutes to do. And I know there's loads of brilliant carbon measuring and reporting toolkits out there that do a very good job of getting you to do that. What we've been doing in Cheltenham and what's going to start nationally in January in 10 local authorities, including Manchester. Yeah. And I've been speaking with Helen about this since about February, so we should be doing it at this point, I guess. This toolkit, it can be integrated either as an extra form that is filled out, very simple, very easy to do, or it can be integrated into IT systems. And just about anyone can fill it out. You don't need to be a specialist. It's a very simple series of questions, but there's a very complex algorithm that is also permission-based, three-line for the statisticians in the room, which does the kind of calculations behind it. What this ends up doing is it produces a number of things. So you fill out during your licensing, there we are, there's a methodology process flow for my academics in the room. You fill out your questionnaire, your donut questionnaire, and it produces this. Number one, advisories for the event organizer. So it tells you how you can make your event more sustainable and more accessible. It is linked into frameworks as part of a social value model to make sure that that information is shared back quickly and efficiently. It provides reporting information for events commissioning groups and SAG. Yes, sustainability and accessibility within a SAG group, I've seen it happen, it can happen. So you can use it to produce data for that. And then data sets. What I noticed, and I'll be honest here, Helen, it was when we were going through three or four events in a single park in Manchester, is that when you fill out these toolkits, for any environment or any particular location or any particular event type, you start to build up a data set which will allow you to take this wonderful growth agnostic series of recommendations. And what I mean by that is it puts profit last. It looks at all the other variables of what's good for people and what's good for planet, then it makes an empirical recommendation of where you can put your funding. Now, if your jobs are any like mine, it's very, very difficult to go to your SMT and get people to portion funding or expenditure to particular areas of accessible or sustainable practice. This provides a fairly solid evidence base. Okay, so it means that you know where you can pour your money, you know where you can prioritize funding. You start to put that across cities, you get a data set for the sector, and you can aggregate that analysis to find all kinds of priorities. We're still learning about it. It's a much better idea than I thought it was when I had it, so I'm still catching up with my own thinking at this point. And there'll be a point next year where I think we'll be in a really good position with it. Does it work? Yes, it works. This was Cheltenham Jazz Festival 2022. Yeah, that's right. I'll put how bad we were on the screen. But we went through it, and we actually changed our procurement and our contracting processes as a result. And we moved from this very, very red and yellow spot, looks bad, doesn't it, into a much more green and yellow bit. The eagle-eyed of you will spot that our ticketing processes got worse. That's because we changed our website. We will be looking at that again. And then what's really nice is that this Midsummer Fiesta, this is a local authority run event in the same park. We shared our information with them, so they've now got our data set as well. We could also share the recommendations with them. We shared HVO suppliers. Now people are sending me all kinds of emails about the carbon efficacy of HVO over diesel, but it's improved nonetheless. What's going on next? Because I'm almost out of time, if not out of time already. Okay, looking at the chair. Okay, 30 seconds. Sorry, I realise I'm talking 100 words a minute. If you've got questions, come ask me afterwards. The Green Events Code of Pilot, Code of Practice Pilot. So I'm working with Vision 2025 and Julie's Bicycle. Again, we've got 10 local authorities, and we start that in January. I've spoken to about 20 local authorities about so far. It's only in England, the pilot, but there's anyone here today from Wales, Scotland or Northern Ireland. I've worked with people in Glasgow and Cardiff so far and Belfast, but I am looking to do separate pro bono work in those environments because it shouldn't just be England. We've started doing every single property and public space in Cheltenham, so there's a venue and public space version of this. So I've got a team of 10 undergraduate students who are going out and doing an awful lot of work for me, which is connecting with... I don't literally whip the students, by the way. I shouldn't have done that. I realised as soon as I did it, I should have probably not done that. Look, you all laughed at a poo joke earlier. I know where the line is in this room. Okay, so we're also working with the University of Liverpool, just down the road, on their mapping project. And then also we're working with a couple of Dutch universities because even though we've got the knowledge and experience and empiricism here, my goodness, do they have the infrastructure. And it's really nice when the Netherlands comes and says, can you help us be more sustainable? You kind of... Yes, please. So there we are, we're doing that. I've also just been asked this week to write a chapter for Contemporary Issues and Events, which will be about integrating and testing this policy practice across the UK and how we can uplift everyone's ideas, everyone's experiences, all this empiricism in this room into some kind of policy in the hope we can just try and make events a little bit more sustainable, a little bit more accessible. Thank you.
Thank you.
I think you had 2 minutes left, actually. Okay, so we're going to now move over to Tamar. So...
I talk less and not that fast. Yes, in 2021, besides Wonderfield, I also founded together with a friend, Peter Florence, who you might know from Hay Festival, the European Festivals Forest, which is a carbon capture project for arts companies. And I have this. And it's super simple. We are both involved in European Festivals Association, and Catherine, the secretary, asked both of us, like, can you come up with a very simple idea to make for the festivals in the European Festivals Association to I don't know, become greener. And Peter thought of this. and you all know this infographic. Obviously, I'm also into reducing and refusing and all the R's, but we added one, and it's mitigation. And it's very simple. You can just buy a tree with us, with the European Festival's forest, and it's only €2, and we plant it in Iceland. And, well, there is some information about how many trees 1,000 kilometers is. It's very simplified, of course. It's more complex than I just tell you now. But we're working together with the Icelandic Forest Service, which is already working for more than 70 years in Iceland, afforestating Iceland. So they have all the data about how much CO2 is captured by the trees and which trees and where what trees to plant in Iceland, because not all the trees can grow in Iceland. So they have all the data, and we just have the network and try to persuade as many festivals, so you're very happy to join the forest, to become one of the festivals joining our project. And how does it work? Well, it's super simple. Most of the festivals that joined ask their visitors for a voluntary donation of €2 or a multiple in their ticket system. We have some festivals and also touring companies. Also, the Brussels Jazz Orchestra is joined, and a flamenco organization, a touring company, and they just donate an amount of money to for the travels or for the festival, for the CO2 they output. Or, of course, you can have a carbon levy on a booking, but there's none of the festivals yet that are doing that. I know a festival in the Netherlands, Into the Great Wide Open, that does this. They're not into the festival forest, but they ask €12.50 per ticket, and they spend it on green solutions. Yes, this is Trousty. He plants actually the trees, and they did so in this autumn. So these are all the festivals that joined. So there are a couple of festivals from the Netherlands, but also from Spain, Serbia, Germany, Italy, and of course Iceland and Switzerland. And we're handing out but it's not an official carbon certificate, but the Icelandic Forest Service helps us calculate the your carbon offset. So you get a carbon offset certificate. So you can join, please do. And you can also donate right now if you want to. You just use the QR code. If you have any questions, please do ask. I mean, it's so simple, but I can imagine that you have questions nevertheless. And at the moment, I think we have now 15 or 16 festivals or companies. And this year we planted 2,828 trees, and next year it will be around 6,000. So it's growing. What's the target? Is there a target? Is there a target? No, I think every tree is one. I mean, I'm very happy to plant whatever you want me to plant. Well, the good thing about Iceland, sorry, I forgot to tell. I mean, the good thing about Iceland, I mean, it's a European project. So we had to find a country in Europe to plant the trees. It's a Dutch-based organization, foundation, a non-profit foundation. But we obviously have no space. In Belgium, there's no space. It would be weird to go to Germany and France. I don't know. There are were several countries to, that is difficult to go to. And Iceland had so much experience, this Icelandic Forest Service. And, well, it's weird to say, but the upside of climate change... climate change, almost bingo. Someone has to say Roman Empire, and then I have a bingo. the sort of upside of climate change is that Iceland, more of Iceland, is going to is available for planting trees and also more diverse trees. And another upside I had to tell from Peter, but because he really likes it, is that there are no squirrels. So the little trees are not eaten by the squirrels, the saplings. Iceland has really a lot of advantages. And so we'll stick to Iceland for the moment.
Brilliant. Where's the clicker? There you go. If I just have the clicker, I've just got a few slides, and I was told never start with an apology, but that's how I always tend to be. So I'm ever so sorry. I'm very tired today. I've not had a lot of sleep this week. My little boy woke up at 3:30 the other morning just to have a chat, and also another reason my head's a bit all over is I'm 3 weeks away from finishing the job that I'm currently doing as environmental sustainability manager here at Factory International and for the Manchester International Festival. And I also just want to share for everyone in this room, because I'm starting a new role in January, which is very relevant to the conversation we're having, because I'm going to work at the Arts Council as the senior manager responsible for environmental responsibility. So for anyone who is an MPO, will be me looking at you. So when your head's just kind of halfway between here and there and all of these things. So I'm not going to probably talk as long as Tamar and Andrew, and it might seem slightly, not speculative, but a bit more sort of, theoretical, not so kind of practical and that kind of base. So please just bear with me. Thank you very much. That's apology over. Now move on. So the title for our panel this afternoon was Shaping the Future Together. And I thought that was actually really interesting, because our mission statement, this is our lovely logo of Factory International, based on the design of the building that you're in, so you can see how it's very iconic, it's right there. But our vision is that we're the place where you invent tomorrow together. I'm like, well, that's like shaping the future together. And I've sort of reflected on that as, what does it mean to invent tomorrow together? What does that look like? And obviously, because I'm the sustainability manager, and I've worked around arts and sustainability for, 10 years or more from back when I started as a sustainability manager at Arcola Theatre in 2010. And for me, the idea of inventing tomorrow together, so if by extension, by an echo, shaping the future together, is fundamentally around sustainability. It's fundamentally around environmentalism. And it's like, because that idea of tomorrow, like, what's the world tomorrow that we want, what do we want the world tomorrow to look like? Sorry, I'm stumbling over my words and things. So that and how are we going to get there? And I think that idea, like, our invention is what we need. It's our creativity. So for me, the idea of inventing tomorrow together is, how do we creatively collaborate to create a future that's based on equity, to create a future that works for people and for planet, and isn't just extractive and all of those things. And that idea, together, is really important. Somebody said to me when I said, oh, that's our vision statement, I feel it's such a powerful thing. And they say that idea of together is an invitation. It isn't, we need your help to do this. We can't do this on our own. So how do we do it together? And I think that really speaks to kind of this idea of the panel shaping the future together. It isn't that one person, one organization has all of the answers. It's how do we collaborate to get to where we want to get to. So that's some of the thoughts I want to share. I've just got three slides to kind of hold on to it. So it's sort of riffing more on that idea of collaboration, because I think for me that is really what's so important about how we get to where the future that we want to get to is through collaboration. So I think sharing that thing that I'm going to be at the Arts Council from January, like, how does that work for you? What could we get out of that? What could we build together? And that's something that I really want to, that I feel kind of in my heart. And I think that's how we do that, because nobody's got all of the answers on their own, have they? Not one sector, not the arts sector, not the business sector, not all these things. We have to share, and we have to share so we can shape a future that works better for everyone. There we go. So, just a little bit about Manchester International Festival for people who might not have come across it before. It's been going since 2007. It's a biannual festival, so every 2 years it emerges for 18 days, 18 extraordinary days across Manchester. And one of the things about Manchester International Festival is that its commissioning approach is that it's new commission, so it's work that's never been seen anywhere else, and that's brilliant and it's exciting, but it's really hard to get a handle on when you're trying to think about sustainability because nobody knows what's going to come out there. It likes to mix up art forms and artists and things, so it's been fantastic that this thing's been happening in Manchester since 2007. I think, Helen, you volunteered in it in, like, 2009 or so, didn't you? Yes, I've just put a slide together. It's a lot of information there, some of the things from the festival this year. So, obviously, this year in MIF 23 was the first year that we had this building. So we had the Yayo Kusama, Yumi and the Balloons exhibition taking over the warehouse. So I don't know if people on the tour went to see that warehouse space. There's 60 metres by 30 metres, so full of inflatable artworks. And then just some stats about the festival, the fact that, you know, we I think met 125% of the sales target, so 125,000 tickets. Huge volunteer program, lots more diversity in our audiences, and increase in first-time visitors. So the three things that I wanted to take, I'm going to go back, if it's all right, to the logo slide, but we can share these afterwards if people want. So thinking about shaping the future together, so there's three things that I wanted to kind of share on that. One, it's about communities. It's about who we're connected with in terms of our organisations and the work that we're doing. And the thing that I wanted to share with that isn't about Manchester International Festival, but it's about an event that we had, an event called The Welcome, which was, if the schedules had all run as they were supposed to when this building was commissioned, this was going to be the first thing that was happening in our building. And The Welcome was a 9-day festival, considering that we'd just done a festival in the summer and then done Free Your Mind, the official opening show, which was a dance interpretation of The Matrix directed by Danny Boyle. And then we did this afterwards. So everyone in this organisation is very tired right now. But the idea behind The Welcome, and John McGrath, who's our artistic director, called it the biggest housewarming party in the world, was that it's a 9-day festival that was curated by the Factory Assembly, who were a group of 20 residents from across Greater Manchester who've been working together for over 2 years to basically design and develop the programme for this festival. I'm just going to open this out so you could actually see the scale of the programme. Across every space in this building, there was something happening for 9 days. And it was just so wonderful to see the range of people that it brought to this building, and the range of things that are happening. So I think shaping the future together really has to involve the communities that you're connected with in really deep and meaningful ways. And that takes time. It takes a lot of time. It's not something that can happen quickly. Another thing I think that's important about shaping the future together, particularly when you're thinking about sharing and that knowledge and things, is networks. Like Andrew mentioned, USAN. It's a terrible acronym. I wish we did it. But we got Urban Sustainability Action Network, which is just a very small network that Mark Denby, who's the director of production at Norfolk and Norwich, kind of brought together, because he noticed, you know, he's part of the, he was on the board for Without Walls with Jane, who's chairing the panel, like a sort of gap in sort of knowledge and development stuff, because there's lots of advice and things there for arts organisations, lots of things around festivals, but they all seem to be greenfield festivals and things. So USAN kind of came together about those of us who work in organisations, it sounds clunky, those of us who work in organisations who put on events and festivals in urban spaces. So we've started collaborating and sharing and networking in that, and it's brilliant, and things come out of it like Andrew's donut thing. But then another network that I'm part of, which is a place-based network, is in Manchester. So originally it was called the Manchester Arts Sustainability Team, and now it's expanded to be GMAST, so Greater Manchester Arts Sustainability Team. And that's people who are involved in sustainability in organisations of all different art forms, all different sizes. I think there's about 70 organisations in that, and that just that strength and diversity. So no matter what scale and size of your organisation, we all face the same challenges. So how do we come together and talk about that? And in fact, the next GMAS meeting is next Wednesday at the Science and Industry Museum just next door. So we get together every 3 months and just sit around the table and share what we're doing. And it's so powerful and great. So other things that help us shape the future. And then I guess my final thought, something that I have been reflecting on since MIF23. So we had a show. Just going to give a bit of a language warning. The title of the show might be a bit triggering for some people, and my apologies for that. It's a bit of a provocative title of the show. We had a show that was on at home that's gone on to tour in Germany, and it's at the South Bank actually in January, and I really recommend it. Enjoyed it. It was called The Faggots and Their Friends Between the Revolutions. And the thing that kept resonating for me after that show, great show, you know, not just the content and things like this, but there's a song in there where they say, the more you share, the less you need. And that really stuck with me of like, that's a really lovely idea. The more you share, the less you need. But then you kind of get into the, but how do you do that? How do you effectively share? How do you create the spaces for that? And so that's, sorry, I've just been pouring out my brain for you for a little while, but now I'll hand on to Jane and we can have a discussion. Thank you.
So thank you very much to our three panellists. Can I invite you up to these very uncomfortable chairs? I always worry about accessibility with chairs like that. Anyway, so thank you. Three very different approaches, I think, and we've seen some great tools. Some good initiatives, and also I think it was great for Matter that you brought in sort of social sustainability, which is often overlooked. So, you know, the power of engaging with the local community. And I think, you know, the Welcome is obviously a brilliant example of a venue and a festival's doing that, and also insight into some great networks that are out there and the power of sharing. So anyway, so I think we've got probably about 10 minutes for questions. So would anybody like to ask the first question? Come on. Rona. Here you are.
There's one on the lectern, I think. Yeah, Andrew, I was just going to ask you about, you were talking about how people could get in. My question to you was, what can people do? How can they get involved? You talked about maybe doing some more pro bono work in different parts of the country, and we're a UK-wide network. So, yeah, what's the next step for people in this room who are interested in doing more, and what can they do?
Yeah, I think if any organisation, you know, whether you're a festival or a local authority or whoever you represent, if you're interested in that toolkit, I'd be very happy to provide it for free with a short training session so you know how to use it and you can actually kind of build off that. So I don't know how we could share that information, but I'd be very happy to send that to you afterwards. And anyone, come knock on the door. Anyone. All right?
And when we share the SUV, right?
There we are.
Sorry, I don't know why I'm handing my thing. Sorry.
Yeah. I wanted to ask you a question, sorry, just before, about the donut again, which was... Is this a free tool that people can use, or is there any sort of cost implication?
It is a free tool. I'm happy to give it to everyone. My time, unfortunately, I do have to charge for. So again, I can give you stuff and then go away and kind of do what you want with it. I'm very happy for people to do that. As far as I'm concerned, if this IP is useful, it's free and it's for use by the world. Otherwise, what was the point in creating it? I think we shouldn't be paywalling planetary protection either. Call me old-fashioned. So yeah, it's... It could be used by anyone.
Okay. Tamar, sorry.
Well, I might have a question for you, and I'm sorry, maybe it's doubling with the session yesterday. I wasn't there. But with Wonderfield, we struggled last year, or actually within the team, we struggled a bit with... We had a focus on Turkey this year with our festival, and we had a superb collaboration with Istanbul Music Festival, with the wonderful director, Efruz Çakırkaya, and it was all amazing. I loved it. But it raised questions within the team because we are also part of the Circular Festivals Network, the Green Deal Circular Festival Network, working towards net zero in 2025. Oh my God, that's tomorrow. And our international focus isn't helping at all, because we had, well, not that many flights, but there were about 20 flights from Turkey and back, of course. And I was just wondering, how do you deal with this? Because I had serious questions from within my team. And I wrote an article about it, why I chose a focus on Turkey, why I wanted to do it, but I'm still struggling with it somehow, because in the end, no, it's not helping or getting more circular.
Yep. No, I mean, it's one of the things I kind of not wrestled with, but thought about a lot. Like, you know, I've come to work for an organization which has international in its name, in its title. It's Manchester International Festival. And I know that part of the reason the festival was established was to give Manchester an international profile for more than just football things. So it's that kind of like, how do you acknowledge that, yet at the same time be part of a city that's working to net zero without having a complete cognitive dissonance breakdown? So I'll just talk about some of the things that I've done in my time here. So I've developed a sustainable travel policy, which, again, I'd be very happy to share. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you say you're just happy to share things. I sometimes think, like, knowledge only gains in value once you start sharing it. And so I developed a sustainable travel policy, which covers all travel booked and paid for by the organisation. So artists, business travel, all of those things. And I started, it was in April 2022, I started doing quarterly travel carbon footprinting. So from staff commuting and business travel and things. So I've not kind of gone, right, we're not going to fly anymore, but it's just kind of acknowledging that as an international festival, this is part of what we do. I so wholeheartedly believe in the importance of international exchange. I nearly said it. I didn't say it. What's on your bingo card? But I think since the events of a few years ago, this island is on the way to becoming a sadder, colder, lonelier place. And that I resist that fully. But actually think about, who is it who gets to travel? Why are they traveling? How do we... I mean, we're not going to... So we're about to get into kind of the historical impact of climate change, but I'm not going to do that. But, like, why is it always people from Europe who've been travelling everywhere? What does it look like when people from the global south start to travel and do stuff? So I've been thinking about it, but also just to be honest and face up to it. It's like, we're an international festival. These are some of the things that's important. So within the sustainable travel policy, one of the things that I've done is I've set... Not for the artists, because obviously, you know, we work with international artists from all kinds of places, but internally for our departments, I've set a target maximum number of flights per department each year, and I'm reducing those each year. So you kind of say, well, you know, executive team, I've looked at the data, I've seen how many flights that you take. What would it look like if you only took 30 flights between the four of you this year? So that there's much more like, oh, is that important for us to go to? How many people need to go to that? And it's just, you know, small steps and things in there. But I was really heartened when I walked past the desk of my colleague who manages our international touring. And she said, oh, look, I've started thinking about how I can plan an international tour around Asia so that there's fewer flights and things. So it's just those little things that are starting to trickle out that make me happy. It's not just about making me happy, but, you know, it's reducing our carbon footprint. But it's making me realise that people are thinking about it more. And I think that's the main thing, is like, if people start thinking about things more, then I think they start to make more sustainable decisions.
Sorry. Yeah, well, I just wanted to add, because one of the sessions with, I think, the European Festivals Association, or maybe the Festival Academy, I don't know, one of those, Akram Khan was one of the speakers, and he said he simply decided not to travel by plane anymore. And then I commented in the chat, because it was online. I said, well, that sounds very privileged.
Yes.
Because, sorry to be so bluntly, but you can make this decision, but so many artists can't make that decision. Yeah. They need the work, they need to go, and yeah.
Yeah, that was exactly.
And he had not really an answer to that. No.
Yeah, I think, sorry, I'm not, I feel like I'm...
tagging out older people.
I've seen that as well, where I can't remember who it was, but it was a choreographer who'd kind of, you know, who's in his later years, he's like, I'm not going to fly anymore. It's like, well, you don't have to. Your career, your profile is such a thing that people will, you know, want to video call with you, and that feels like you're creating so many barriers for people who are just kind of coming through. I do think flying is bad. I think we need much better rail connections and things around Europe, but I don't think... You know, yeah, I think we shouldn't demonise people for the choices they have to make to advance their careers.
Yeah, definitely. I've got a question, Tamar, for you about your project, which... So I suppose there's two words that I heard that have been very controversial in Edinburgh at the moment. One is levy. Yeah. We're trying to impose a tourism levy at the moment, which is very... I know Manchester have done this, but which is very, very controversial. And then the other thing is around mitigation. So, again, the Fringe are looking at... I can't remember which island it is. It's some island in the Highlands where they're looking at planting a forest, very similar. But, again, that's... got a lot of controversy around that because, you know, there's a train of thought that says offsetting bad, you know, and we shouldn't be offsetting, we should be adapting, you know, we should be looking for those green solutions. So maybe that every €2 should be going into a big pot where we do R&D and we get infrastructure and, you know, etc. So I suppose I'd just like yours, Tamar's, but also the panel's insight into these two controversial areas of offsetting and levies.
Yeah. well,
sorry.
The one thing isn't excluding the other. Yeah. So I very well know that whatever we're doing, we must do it better and with more sustainable, but in the end, there's always, we always have a footprint. So there's no way what we are doing will be fully circular. It's just the truth. I wish it would be fully circular, but it will not be. So at the end, we need to, if you want to, and I do want to, just... Well, in this case, plant trees or put your money in peat bogs or whatever. I mean, there are several solutions. But try to capture your footprint into trees or whatever you want to invest in.
I think probably it's worth acknowledging that the only sustainable event or festival is the one that doesn't take place. And also virtual is not... carbon free either, and we often use that as a watchword. The two issues you said though, one was levy, what was the other one, sorry?
Offsetting
again, I think we've become a little bit lazy with how we describe it as it's either good or bad. Offsetting is very much a spectrum of things that are available, and that's literally one of the most impressive ones I've seen, because it's about contribution and growth rather than trying to offset something in an industrial economy when, you know, we're kind of causing carbon impacts in the global north. In terms of levy as well, I question this a lot when levy comes up, because levy, again, is probably designed for business and for the market sector, but it ends up in the home every time. What you do when you introduce a levy is you generally make it easier for rich people. It is a poor person's tax, and until we have a better system of wealth distribution, I can't actually see a way past it.
Thank you.
Those are both really great things. I just wanted to signpost people to an article that I read recently. So people, I don't know if many people here from the visual arts sector, but one of the joys of working in a multi-art form venue is you get to find out lots of things there. But there's an outfit called the Gallery Climate Coalition who are trying to create a sustainable visual arts sector, as it were. And they've got an article on their website, which is a kind of great explainer about offsetting and some of the challenges and things about it. Like, I hadn't realised the amount of offsetting that, I can't remember, two large multinational companies have promised to do. There's not enough space in the earth for them to actually do that. So I think that's what comes to be some of the challenges around offsetting, is just like, but actually when there's schemes that you can see that it's happening and it's working, and also that are in Iceland, because actually one of the challenges with one of the things that is in this article, a lot of the offsetting schemes are in the global south, and it's called carbon colonialism. So it's like, okay, now we're going to, that's where we're planting trees, and it's so that feels icky to me as somebody who comes from Sierra Leone in West Africa. But yeah, so I really recommend reading that article. It's very short, so on the Gallery Climate Coalition. Around levies, I don't really have much to add. Also, you look at that. And I hadn't realised that Manchester started actually charging what we call the tourism
levy. They do have a tourism levy. They're the first city, I think, in the UK
to have
a tourism levy, yeah.
Manchester's tax. Manchester's gone all out on tourism, and I'm not sure.
I mean, I think in Edinburgh, you know, slightly off target here, but in Edinburgh the thinking is that if that money goes into culture, that's great. But will the money go into culture or will it go into potholes, which are obviously equally important? But, you know, so it's very, very contentious at the moment. So any other questions from the room? We're all getting tired. Yes. So maybe I will go then to a final comment from each of the panelists. So I think, thank you so much for sharing all the amazing things that you're doing, you know. And I think, like for me, one of the most important things I think is getting a benchmark. And this is what I say because I do assessments for AGF. And what I say to people is it doesn't really matter where you are. It's about knowing where you are. So it's like getting that benchmark where you go, right, well, this might not be great in terms of our carbon footprint, but at least we know what it is. And even if next year we reduce it by 5%, 2%, 10%, that's what it's about. It's about making the decision and knowing where you are, and then everything else sort of comes from there. So I suppose it'd be great if you could all give us maybe one idea or top tip about what the people in the room could do in terms of looking at the future sustainability of their venues, festivals, organisations.
Thank you. I think probably don't let perfect be the enemy of progress. I think I keep hearing that. And it's not just about low-hanging fruit. I think that positions or frames the issue incorrectly. It's about trying to do as much as you can. Something is better than nothing. And I think, again, the knowledge is out there. The systems and people who do the measurements, that those company exists, connect with them where you can. And my kind of lasting thing for the room as well, I'm going to make sure I'm going to look everyone in the eyes when I say it. Third time, okay, if I can help you or if that work that I'm undoing speaks to you, we're collating some empiricism, which is gathering some momentum and some impact. Please help me. Anything we can do together as a sector or just as a group of humans is going to make a difference.
Well, the one thing that really helps, and everybody can do it, I learned from Fiona last April, choose your bank wisely. So just go for a green bank. And I really love it, and I preach it all the time, everywhere I go, Fiona. So thank you.
How do you finish up with one of those? So, yeah, set a benchmark, know where you are so that you can see how much progress you've made, and don't beat yourself up if your progress is slow. We can't change everything all the time. You know, we can't change everything all at once, can you? You kind of have to realise that it is some things are incremental and some things can jump. Don't let perfection get in the way of progress. I remember when I worked at Arcola Theatre, we said we were going to be the world's first carbon neutral theatre, and everyone's like, how? We're like, we don't know, we're going to get there though. You know, set that ambition about the difference, the world that you want to see. And if it's all right, I just want to finish with the image that I always have when I'm thinking about sustainability in cultural organisations. I think about a rainbow and the fact that a rainbow needs to be on the ground in both ends. So for me, it's about that one end of the rainbow is the data, the measuring, the monitoring and all of that. But if you just focus on that, you kind of forget what it is that you're doing. And the other end of the rainbow is that world that's kind of built on justice and equality and balance. And you're like, but if you just have one end of the rainbow, it doesn't work. You need to know how far along you are with it, but you also need to know where you're heading.
Yay.
I'm so stealing that.
Okay, so I think that was a very nice way to end with the rainbow, somewhere over the rainbow. We could even have a little song. But anyway, so thank you very much to our panelists.
Roman Empire.